ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Paul Feinbaum and Matt Barry.
And we welcome you into the ESPN College Football Podcast. The college season officially underway. I'm Matt Barry, alongside Paul Feinbaum. Every Sunday, the two of us will be here to break down what happens on a busy college football Saturday. Paul, good morning. We had football on Saturday, so it's official. We've begun.
Yeah, Matt, it was just so cool to finally see it. And, yeah, Nebraska, Illinois is probably not a game that would have stopped the two of us in our tracks on a busy football Saturday, but it did yesterday. I was riveted to the game, and the consequences of it, I have just a strange suspicion we are about to talk about.
Yeah, you know, I want to get there because I want to use a theme today, Paul, because you're right. Nebraska, Illinois on a busy college football Saturday when I'm sitting there all day with Joey Galloway, Sam Acho, Jesse Palmer, whomever, and we've got 8-9 games on the screen, that's probably not getting prime billing. But yesterday, because it was a conference game at a week zero small slate, it got the eyes of the country. And that doesn't bode well for a guy like Scott Frost. Brett Bielema in his first year back in the Big Ten, Scott Frost in year four. And Paul, I said it to you when we did the preview show, and I said it to Herbie, and I've said it numerous times, Brett Bielema could make life hell for Scott Frost. And he did that yesterday with not a good performance out of Nebraska.
No, he did. And all the kudos to Coach B, someone I've known really well and like immensely, and I'm glad to see him back. Having said all that, the happiest man in America yesterday was not Brett Bielema, Matt. It was Jim Harbaugh, because he has officially moved off the number one hit list on the coach's hot seat. And there's no getting around it. And we don't need to waste the audience's time with how much we like Scott Frost and what a great player he was and what a good job he did at UCF. What he has done at Nebraska constitutes a fireable offense. And if he can't figure out a way to dramatically and drastically change the tone and tenor, he will be fired at the end of the season, if not sooner.
Yeah, look, he's in year four. And I want to make that a theme for this show, Paul, because year four, you and I have done this together now for 7-8 years. And we would come in on Sunday mornings on SportsCenter, and we would talk about when the right time is to truly evaluate a head coach. I've always been in the camp of nothing before 4 years. You can't do anything before 4 years. This is year four for Scott Frost. And he comes out yesterday after the game and says it's like the same old bad movie. Well, then what are you doing to write a different ending to that movie if it's the same thing to begin year four?
There's nothing you can do, Matt, other than just listen to a lot of nonsensical conversations from him and ultimately from his athletic director, Trev Alberts, who's in a really precarious spot. And I know what he told Wojo yesterday on game day, that he's not coaching for his job. Yes, he is. He's coaching for his job every single week. And yesterday was the best chance just to end it, to put it away. Get off to a good start, win the next two games, go to Norman and take a beating, but at least get some momentum. But he's lost that. And where he's really lost it is in recruiting. Matt, neither one of us are recruiting gurus, but right now decisions are being made. And give me some reason why any young player in this country would say to himself, you know what, I want to go play for Scott Frost at the University of Nebraska. There just simply isn't one. And that's indicative of the players who were there, who are no longer there, and the fact that Nebraska is just no longer a destination spot for top five-star players.
Stay there, because is Nebraska killing the Scott Frost coaching career? Because remember, when he was at UCF, he had overtures from a lot of big-time programs. Is this a Scott Frost is in over his skis, or is this Nebraska just isn't a destination for some of the best recruits in the country now?
I think a lot of it's Nebraska, and you're right, Matt. What, at the end of the 17 season, the two hottest coaches in America were Scott Frost and Chip Kelly. And, you know, Chip Kelly finally had, I wouldn't call it a breakthrough win, and we'll get there in a minute, but a significant win to try to build some momentum. Scott Frost hasn't, that yesterday, Scott Frost hasn't had that. And I don't think he's going to have it, because to me, this looks like dead man walking. Scott Frost looks like dead man walking. And there's just no way to sugarcoat it. And I'm sick of sugarcoating it, because I've been one of those who have, you know, said, well, you know, this guy really is one of the most impressive coaches I've ever seen at UCF. We were around him in Atlanta a couple of years ago, Scott, when he was in transition, and I rode over to the stadium with him the day before the national championship, and I really thought, Matt, he was one of the most impressive coaches up close I've ever been around. But that doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't make one bit of difference. This Nebraska, 2 or 3 weeks from now, when Nebraska goes to Oklahoma, everyone is going to wax poetic, especially those of us who were barely alive in 1971. About that the game of the century. But Nebraska, that's not – Oklahoma is still the same team, still the same program. Nebraska is not. Nebraska football is a shell of itself, and I'm sick and tired of the delusional Nebraska fans bugging all of us in the media about how important they are. They're not. They're irrelevant, and just get used to it, because and it's not changing under Scott Frost.
You're right. We will get to Chip Kelly in a minute, because I think that's a good segue to talk about both of those coaches who came into the same year. They're both in year four, and they both started in week zero, but with Nebraska and with Scott Frost. I have long been – I'll die on this hill with college football coaching, and people will disagree, but I'll stick with it. I believe one of the biggest mistakes you can make as a university and as an athletic director – is bring home a legend to coach your football program. Because what happens when you bring in Scott Frost, who won a national championship? What happens when you bring in Jim Harbaugh, who led the team to the Rose Bowl? They lost to Arizona State in 1987. What happens when you bring Rick Neuheisel to UCLA? These are just some examples of some of these coaches that go to their alma maters to try to be a head coach and recapture that magic. And Paul, more often than not, it doesn't work. Bo Schembechler was on Ohio State's staff before he made Michigan into a powerhouse. I just don't agree with bringing home an alum to try to save all of your ills as a college football program.
No, I understand why you do it. I watch these coaching searches all the time. And not only that, Matt, to get really deep in the weeds, a lot of programs will bring back any connection to success. I just watched this at the University of South Carolina. They hired Shane Beamer, who had never been a head coach or a coordinator. Why? Because he was the recruiting guru when Spurrier won 11 games in a row for three straight years. Fans are desperate, and unfortunately, administrators listen. Now, having said all that, I find a lot of faults with athletic directors and coaching searches. I can't find fault with Nebraska, though, in the Scott Frost case. They hired the best available coach.
They did.
So let's give them that. And 4 years later, they're on the verge of firing him. And I read something today, Matt, where it's not Nebraska's way to make rash decisions and pay $15 to $20 million buyouts. Okay, well, good for them. Give Scott Frost another extension like you did 2 years ago and slip farther and farther into oblivion. And that's, I mean, I don't know. If the two of us were put in charge of that program, I'm not really sure where I would go right now, because this may be a program that is beyond salvage. Now, a lot of programs are on the verge of that, but now with Nebraska, we've seen them go through different incarnations of coaches that did not work. This was the guy that everyone wanted, and he didn't work. So when you can't when your favorite son doesn't work, short of just going in the white pages in the Lincoln phone book and finding someone named Osborne, I don't know where you go.
Yeah, and favorite son's a great way to put it. Look, I'm calling UCF, Boise State, Thursday night. They hired Andy Avalos, who was a captain on Boise State. He's a guy. He's a favorite son that Boise State hopes works out. Kirby Smart is another guy who played at Georgia. But it's not all cakes and pies for him, because he can't get over the hump. He had the one national championship game appearance, but he can't get by Alabama. But with regards to Nebraska being done, remember we were saying that about Notre Dame maybe a decade ago, pre-Brian Kelly, that this isn't the Notre Dame of yesteryear where they had a TV network all to themselves, and that was all that was on TV on a Saturday. It was ABC, CBS, NBC, and this cable network called ESPN, and that was even primitive at the time. So he was able to resuscitate Notre Dame with academic restrictions that are much more difficult than Nebraska. I don't know that Nebraska isn't salvageable. I just think the years of them being considered a top 15 program, I think those have probably passed.
Yeah, listen, they can have a good program. I mean, and even the team we watched on Saturday afternoon, it's not a bad team. I mean, they have potential. And when you look at the Big Ten this year, there's some winnable games. They have a couple of really tough games at home. They're not going to beat Ohio State, but you know, they could beat somebody. But what is good at Nebraska is, I mean, I was looking at that schedule before we taped this thing, Matt, and 7-5 would be a great finish right now for them. Is that what you want at Nebraska? Now listen, it's better than what 12-21, which is what they've been doing under Scott Frost. And yeah, you know, what it comes down to in determining whether you fire a coach is the program getting significantly better where you can say, okay, let's gamble one more year, and if it right. works, then we're on our way. Or is it just, as I said, beyond salvage, meaning no matter what you do, you're not getting above a certain threshold? And that's really the difficulty. And unfortunately for Nebraska, they have two more weeks of this teeth gnashing, because there's nothing they can do in the next 2 weeks that will undo the utter mess that occurred against Illinois.
We talk often when I come on your show during football season, what is the indicator that a coach has lost a program? It's effort on the field, which I don't believe Nebraska's there. They played well yesterday. Saturday, they had a couple of boneheaded mistakes on special teams. They had a turnover before the half and a scoop and score when it was tied 9-9. So effort's not a problem at Nebraska. That would be criteria one. Criteria two would be lack of ability to recruit. And that seems to be slipping a little bit in talent on the field. I will say for the first half that Nebraska defense looks pretty good, Nebraska defense. But when we sum it all up and we take where Scott Frost has this program right now relative where another year four coach has his program and Chip Kelly, look, I know it's Hawaii and Hawaii is not LSU, but with the way Zach Charbonnet ran the ball on Saturday and with the way UCLA did what you're supposed to do with an inferior opponent, which is just kick them all over the field, you have to feel good about the direction of where UCLA football is as Chip Kelly enters year four.
No, you do. And that's why those you know, week zero games, Thursday night games of week one, whatever it is when the nation is watching, you need to make an impression, because there are a lot of – I mean, I realize the LSU game is going to be heavily watched. It's opposite the biggest game of the year so far in college football, though. But Chip Kelly had an opportunity yesterday with a lot of eyes, not only fans, but influential eyes, and he made a very good impression. And that's what you have to do. And, you know, that's what Scott Frost didn't do in the contrast of the two hot coaches from 4 years ago. So I've been listening to you now for quite a while on Chip Kelly. So far, you're right. Now, next week, to me, I mean, what they've done is buy themselves some time against LSU.
Right.
That is not a game changer type of set the table program effector, in the sense that if should they lose that game, nobody's shutting the program down. If they play well, I think it's a win. Can they beat LSU? They certainly look like they're capable of competing.
Right. I mean, you look at all of the out of conference. Interconference games next week. UCLA, LSU certainly has everybody's attention. Georgia, Clemson has everybody's attention. Miami, Alabama, Florida State, and Notre Dame. But what you have there, Paul, with those other matchups I just talked about, those are big time program food group playoff type matchups. UCLA, LSU is a game for Chip Kelly where I find, and I said it on the podcast last week, I think UCLA will be the surprise team in the country. That I won't abandon if they lose to LSU, which, by the way, is dealing with drama from the hurricane. They're going to move to Houston to practice. And I'm not going to abandon UCLA off of one game, but you're going to know a lot about who they are just based on how they compete with LSU, who I think we would all agree is the more talented team.
Yeah, and in this game, where had UCLA lost to Hawaii, the pressure would have been all on Chip Kelly. The pressure really is on Coach O, and you know it's not only last year, which was a pretty rough season that was salvaged at the end. By the way, they literally stole a game from Ole Miss in the final 2 or 3 minutes, And then the shoe game in the swamp was one of the most surprising endings of the year in college football. So a disaster could, I mean, they were headed for the iceberg. They avoided that. But O's problems are off the field. The rumors will not go away about things that he is involved with on the periphery. All it takes is a bad season or an underwhelming season at LSU to get everybody questioning his ability to run a program.
And I don't, did you say this last week? We've seen a hot and talented SEC coach go into the Rose Bowl and lose a game they shouldn't to UCLA. Did you say that when it was Texas A&M?
Exactly.
I mean, you're right. It's very comparable. And so you look, 2 year, four coaches, Scott Frost, Chip Kelly, headed in opposite directions, at least right now after week zero. I want to walk into some of those games a little bit because much like UCLA, if they lose to LSU, I'm not going to write them off in terms of Pac-12 challengers to the Pac-12 South and win in the Pac-12 conference championship. But I'll do the same for Clemson and Georgia. Clemson can lose to Georgia on Saturday, still run the ACC, still get into the playoff. For Georgia, I think it's much more difficult to come out of there with a loss and find their way back in it.
Yeah, Matt, I think, I mean, here we are as August is turning into September and you know, we're depending on the next 3.5 months of football to help make our arguments, which is fine. I look at it a little bit more narrowly. And here's my scenario: if Clemson loses, and yes, they do run the table, but without anything significant on the resume, and everything goes crazy, meaning Oklahoma runs the table and Ohio State runs the table, and you know the Alabama Georgia situation takes care of itself. Then you do have some problems to make that argument. The one thing Georgia has, should it lose, is a straight ticket, meaning if it runs the table in the SEC, primarily having to beat Florida in Jacksonville, and then stuns a number one Alabama team, their ticket will get punched. But I would hate to have to depend on beating Alabama after losing to Clemson to make the playoffs.
Is Alabama, especially with Georgia, what they've got coming back? Because Georgia, look, they've had a lot of injuries in camp. I know they've got JT Daniels coming back. Zamir White's one of the most talented running backs in the country. Kirby Smart's been recruiting as good as anybody in the country. Is this – because we like to ID. Maybe this is the year, and we say that with Alabama every – maybe this is the year they get got. When you look at everything they've got coming back, if you're pinpointing it on Georgia – and the year that Kirby Smart needs to have, I believe this is the year Kirby Smart has to have, because if everybody Alabama's breaking in relative to everyone Georgia's got coming back in Kirby Smart's favor.
Yeah, the concern about Georgia is all the injuries that have happened, and you know, we won't know until Saturday at 7 o'clock really what that looks like. But in Alabama's case, I mean, this is a classic transitional year at Alabama. They probably shouldn't be number one. And they are. They shouldn't be the overwhelming pick to win the national championship, and they are. But we are now into this this Nick Saban era where you just don't want to go against him. And it's cliche, and it's not really becoming of anyone who is paid to be an analyst at this network or anyone else to say, "Well, you'll have to show me before I pick against him." That is not what you go to journalism school to learn, or broadcasting school, or even to trade school. However, that's what we all say. But I was in Tuscaloosa the other day, Matt, speaking to some students. I'm trying to be Matt Berry now.
Big time Q&A for Paul Feinbaum. I saw that.
I don't have quite the pull that you do at your alma mater. I'm not like the poet laureate or whatever, but and the fact I didn't go to Alabama, that has nothing to do with it. The point being, there's a little concern there. They're concerned about things that other people wouldn't be concerned about. Maybe the offensive line isn't clicking, and maybe the connection between Bryce Young and his receivers isn't what it was. But nothing will be what it was last year. I mean, that If we hadn't seen LSU in 19 with Joe Burrow, we would be talking about last year's Alabama team as one of the most perfect teams of all time. But they just so happened to follow maybe the best team we've seen in a generation. But Alabama can lose a game this year. It wouldn't be the biggest upset in the world, but would they lose to Georgia is what we're talking about here.
All right, so I am one of those, and you know me well enough, Paul, by now, that when I'm wrong, I'll admit it and I'll wear it, but I'm not afraid to say what I think about a game coming up. And I don't know why all of these muscular college football brains at the network don't understand that Alabama's replacing three offensive linemen, an NFL running back, two NFL receivers, and a starting NFL quarterback. You're telling me that they are so good that they can just roll out the ball after never having this unit start together against a Miami team who returned everybody and just blow the doors off of them? I just don't see it. It's a 17.5, 18-point spread. That says Vegas is saying it's going to be a blowout. Paul, I don't see it. I think that Alabama needs to be incredibly careful against Miami week one. I really do.
Matt, I agree with you. And you know, part of my contract is I have to say only good things about Alabama. So it's difficult to have to agree with you on that, but I don't get it either. But you know, just back to my earlier point that it's just become part of the institution of discussing college football. And what's interesting is it wasn't like this 2 years ago. Don't forget, Alabama laid an egg by 28 points to Clemson in a national championship game. The next year, with Tua on the shelf, or I can't remember. Yeah, I think he played, but he was banged up. They lost to LSU at home. And then people forget all about this. All they have to do is convert against Auburn, a third down or a fourth down, and they win that game and will still go to the playoff, probably to lose to LSU again, but they didn't, and all of a sudden Nick Saban just, I don't mean this to say that he didn't practice COVID protocol, but in his mind he never let COVID affect him like some coaches. He stayed in his office, hunkered down while coaches were at home watching Netflix with their kids, and he won the title in March and April of 20. But suddenly, because they run the table in COVID year, we can't say anything critical of Nick Saban's team. So you're right. I'm very eager to watch that Alabama-Miami game.
And I've said it to all of the college football people at the network. By the end of the season, I think McElroy and I got an argument on this on SportsCenter. By the end of the season, Alabama may very well be the best team in the country, but you cannot tell me coming into week one based on what's going to be playing on Sundays in the NFL that at least in week one that they're the best team in the country, and we'll get a good indication on Saturday night. I want to end with this, with the week one slate, the Labor Day slate. I had mentioned the matchups, Clemson, Georgia, Alabama, Miami, Florida State, Notre Dame. You've got Penn State, Wisconsin. That's a good one. You've got Gus Malzahn kicking off his career at UCF against Boise State. They've never played ever two group of five programs. When we're recording this next Sunday, what do you believe will be the biggest talking point coming out of Labor Day weekend?
Well, I mean, short of your prophecy on the Alabama-Miami game, I think it will come from the most obvious game, and that's the game that will have been played the night before in Charlotte. I just think there's so much in that game, Matt. Regardless of who wins, there's a storyline. If Clemson wins and Georgia does not look good, heaven help Kirby Smart next Sunday morning, because he will be catching it from everywhere. And conversely, if Georgia wins, all of a sudden we're going to be wondering, okay, is this now the year that Georgia finally gets over the top? Should they be ranked number one in the country? Are they better than Alabama? So I know it. I mean, I would love to find an obscure game to tell you that we'll be talking about, and someone will lose. You know that. There'll be an upset or two on weekend one, but I think the obvious game is going to be where we end up next week.
Yeah, and look, obscure is all well and good, but when you have a slate like we do coming into week one, and that's any other week, That Friday night game to North Carolina, Virginia Tech would be a talker. And that, I'll say it about them. They need to be careful going playing Virginia Tech because they lost a ton of players. And the preseason rankings, all they are, in my opinion, it's fuel to talk because the preseason rankings aren't based on anything that has to do with this season. Everyone's living in 2020 to rank who you think should be the best team in 2021. And you're going to get a really good indication of that in week one.
Yeah, and you mentioned Virginia Tech. How long ago was it that Justin Fuente was the hottest coach in the country? I mean, you could these lists go on and on and on. Yep. That is a really big game for him. And we both feel equally great about Mack Brown, but that program traditionally finds a way to blow a game when they're not supposed to. Maybe not this year with Sam Howell, but I think it's one of the better opening weekends. I wish we were 100% back from COVID, but we're going to act like last year didn't happen anyway. And I think that the enthusiasm that I've detected being around a few places lately, and I know you have as well, is really at an all-time high for college football.
Yeah, it felt like football, smelled like football yesterday. I can't wait to get this thing kicked off all over the country. Before we get out of here, we do want to give our best thoughts and prayers with those in Louisiana. We're going to be dealing with a very difficult situation, football the farthest thing from their mind. So everybody be safe out there in Louisiana with that storm on the way. I'll be back tomorrow with Kirk Herbstreit. So you make sure to download and subscribe. Don't miss a single episode of the ESPN College Football Podcast. Be sure to check out the Paul Feinbaum Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern on the SEC Network. And Paul, you're going to be back on the road with SEC Nation. I know where you guys are in Atlanta week one. Is that correct?
That is correct. We'll be there before the game. And, it will be cool because I did not travel with the team last year because they didn't travel. And this year, everything is so much different. And we have Tim Tebow back, courtesy of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And is everybody on the bus? Like, is your name, image, and likeness back on the bus?
We're still negotiating with Zaxby's on that.
All right. Well, keep me posted on that. Always good talking ball with you. This Sunday is going to be fun. We'll be able to recap everything from the night before. Cannot wait to get this thing started. We appreciate the download and listen. Rate us. Have fun with us. It's the ESPN College Football Podcast, the Sunday edition with Matt Barry and Paul Feinbaum.